Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Mat-Su Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio. Follow us along on social media, searching for the same name, Dog Works Radio. And calling in from, I assume, sunny California is our co-host, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It's actually nice and warm here, which has been a change. We've had unseasonably cold weather. Of course, nothing like what you have up there, but, our blood is thin down here.
It is thin and it is warm, that is for sure. But I understand you guys are in a record-setting year for rain and all that down there. How's that faring up for this drought that we've been talking about for the last few years?
Well, you know, we've had very little rain for the last 5 or 6 years. So this rainy season has started off really well. We are at, I think, about 100 or 150% of what our normal rain level is. For the past couple of years, we've been around, you know, like 5%, which is just awful. The reservoirs have gotten really low. So the reservoirs are filling up. The snowpack in the mountains is a lot better, but from what I understand, we still lost a tremendous amount of groundwater, so that is still being made up. But we're hopeful that we can have a few more storms coming in. They have there's a weather term for it, but we have basically a conveyor belt of storms that is coming in and hitting us over and over again. And, I don't mind the weather, so I kind of like it, and we certainly need it down here.
And why does this all matter on a mushing show? Because we have friends in California that are mushers up in the Sierra Nevada, Northern California areas, and they have races going on, which they haven't had in years. So it's a good thing to have a little bit different weather than they're typically having down in your part of the country. So I'm glad that is happening. Not only rain for you guys, but snow up in the higher elevations. You know, down here we have snow, probably have a couple of feet on the ground up in Willow. Everything's looking good for trails. And this past weekend was a big weekend in terms of racing here in the South Central area and in the on the Kenai Peninsula. We have two races that we're going to talk about. The first one is going to be the Tustamina 200. It has not happened for the last 4 years. They finally were able to celebrate their 30th anniversary just this past weekend. The last 4 years, they have had absolutely no snow to hold that race. And then the big boy, the 300, the Northern Lights 300, also took place this weekend here in the Mat-Su Valley, and it was a great race as well. Do you have anything to talk about on Tustamina before we talk about some of the folks that finished?
Yeah, this was, as you mentioned, this is a race that has been canceled for the past few years, so it was great to be able to have enough snowpack and have enough, snow on the ground to be able to hold this race. It was a fairly exciting race. I wasn't following it all the way through, but I was following it at the end on the tracker. And, as we've talked about on the show a number of times, pretty much every major race now has the GPS trackers on the sleds. So you can track where each team is more or less in real time. Sometimes there's a little bit of a problem with the tracker not pinging and not updating, but certainly you get a much clearer view of who's moving and who's stopped, how fast people are going, and it really lets you follow the race in great detail in a way that wasn't possible a few years ago.
The Tustamina 200 is a tough race. I did it several years ago, since it's been 4 years since it has taken place. It runs from Kasilof, which is south of Soldotna, and through the Caribou Hills. And when we say hills, they're more like mountains. And it goes high above the tree line, and you're up there in the middle of nowhere, and then back down to the coast to Homer and back. So it is a very tough race, especially if you have not trained for that type of hill training with your dogs. But it's a race that is a good qualifier for the Iditarod. It gets those dogs ready for those up and down hills like they'll see on various sections of the trail and at first there on the Alaska Range. And, you know, I was reading a lot of the Facebook posts and some of the interviews afterwards, Alex, and Nick Pettit, he's been doing great this year. I know he had to scratch on the Copper Basin, but he did very good in the Connect 200. And he said that he was chasing Sim Smith, and he says that that guy just runs like the wind. That's a guy that is tough to catch. And we've talked about his brother, Ramey, typically will do very well on the coast on Iditarod, and he's been known to wear a pair of running shoes to run that last section of Iditarod Trail. And it's my understanding that's what Sim was doing to finish this race and coming in first. So in first place, Sim Smith, second place, Nicholas Pettit, third place, Dave Turner, fourth place, Mitch Seavey, fifth place, Yor Olsom, and then sixth place, Noah Burmeister, Ray Reddington, Monica Zappa, and Tim Osmar. And just to note, Monica and Tim, they live right there on the trail of the Tustamina. So this is their home stomping grounds. And, you know, I'm very happy to see Monica do that well in this race. I got to give her kudos being the first woman in the top 10 there.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, this is a very exciting field in terms of names that are familiar to Iditarod fans and to race fans in general. When I was watching on the tracker, it looked like Nick Pettit was ahead, but then Sim Smith just came rearing up behind him and just seemed unstoppable in the last, you know, the last 40 or 50 miles of the race.
Right, and that last 40 or 50 miles is coming from a checkpoint called Freddy's Roadhouse, and that is a true roadhouse. It's a great place to stop and rest your dogs. I don't believe that they have a mandatory stop there. Typically, on the way out, you'll stop your dogs, maybe grab a burger or something on the way out, and then you have to do your mandatory stop there in Homer. And I believe it's 6 or 8 hours, and don't quote me on that. But there in Homer, it's a beautiful checkpoint there at one of the elementary or middle school schools. You can relax there and grab a nice meal, then turn around and go back the other way. But that last 50 miles, it truly is up and down from the beginning of the race to the end. There's not a lot of flat spots to run. And if you can really catch your second wind, so to speak, and finish strong, it's tough to catch you.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got to wonder, looking earlier this fall and early winter, it wasn't clear that there was going to be a lot of snow on the ground, and it certainly wasn't clear, I think, a few months ago that there would be enough snow to run this race. So my question to you, for the Mushers' perspective, is knowing that there are these two races on the same weekend, the Northern Lights 300, the Tustamina 200, how do you choose which one you would want to enter?
You know, that's a great question, Alex, and we have talked about that on several occasions here on the show. And all of the race organizations try their best to not schedule races on the same weekend. As we've talked about, the Connect 200 usually is the kickoff, the first weekend of the year, and then we have the Cusco, then we have the Copper Basin, then we have the Northern Lights, and now we have the Tustamina. And then we'll typically have, now we have the Willow 300, and then we'll go into the Quest and then on into the Iditarod. But since the Tustamina hasn't gone on for the last few years, they sort of had to piggyback on the Northern Lights. And you will see when we talk about some of the mushers in the Northern Lights, just about everybody that ran both of these races, all of the big names in the sport ran one or the other. And I would tend to believe that most of the rookies that needed qualifiers for 18 probably ran the Northern Lights because it's more difficult to catch those 300s than it is the 200s. There's several 200s that are out there, and you only have to do one of those to qualify for Iditarod, whereas you have to do two 300s. You have to do 750 miles to qualify, and it has to require two 300-mile races. So, yes, I think that this is sort of one, and you can see by the standings, just about everybody on the list is an Iditarod veteran, don't you think?
Yeah, and it was certainly a very interesting race in terms of looking at the people who are in both of these races. Actually, just a lot of very, very big names and a lot of up and coming mushers. So it was, if I had been there, I'm not sure where I would have been because they both were very, very exciting races.
And you know what is interesting with the Tustamina before we jump over to the Northern Lights is I'm looking down the list and just knowing where folks live, Mitch Seavey, Monica Zappa, Tim Osmar, Paul Gephardt, Anna Barrington, Kristen Barrington, Dean Osmar, all of those guys, this is their home turf. This is their training ground. So I see why they signed up for this race, because this is where they train their dogs. So a lot of Peninsula mushers are here on this list.
Yeah, and I noticed that towards the end of the field we have Cindy Abbott, our pal Cindy Abbott, who is a neighbor of yours now up in Willow, who went down for that race.
Yes, and coming right behind her is Jacob Valley, I believe is how you say his name. He is also running dogs with Cindy and Vern out of Dream a Dream Dog Farm here in Willow. So it looks like they have an up-and-coming musher there training for Iditarod, I assume, for 18 at Vern's kennel with Jacob. So that's a good thing to see, is having some of that new mushing blood, so to speak, coming up with Jacob.
Right, and I know we've covered this before, but I just want to reiterate for people who are, you know, who don't pay a lot of attention to these races and then start to pay attention with the Quest and the Iditarod. Certainly you want to do well, and certainly it is a great accomplishment to win or finish in the top five or top 10 of these races. But a lot of times, especially for you know, more seasoned dog teams, you are also using this as a way to see how your dogs will react to certain certain circumstances that you might encounter in one of the 1,000-mile races. So you're looking to see if you have leaders that you're not quite sure of, you can give them a chance and see how they would do in that position. You maybe have a couple of yearlings or younger dogs that you want to try out, and you're not quite sure if they're ready to go all the way on the Quest or Iditarod yet. So these races, especially the 200-mile races, really give you a good chance to try out those dogs and to, you know, sort of get them battle tested a little.
Yeah, a lot of the veteran mushers will call them training runs, and they'll say that, or puppy runs. They'll take those younger dogs out to run these lower pressure races, I guess is the right word, like the Tustamina or the Connect 200 or something like that, just to get them out there, get them some race experience, and I think that's a great way to do it. So let's switch over to the Northern Lights, which is held right here in the Matsu Valley. It started at Martin Booser's Happy Trails Kennel? Is that the name
of his kennel? Happy Trails Kennels, yeah.
Yeah, so it starts there in Big Lake. It goes through the swamps, up the river to Yetna, and then it travels up the river to Tal Vista, and then they were going to run overland from Tal Vista down to Eagle Song, but miraculously, you know, we've talked about this, I don't know, for the last 3 or 4 years about lack of snow. They had over 4 feet of snow up in that area, Alex, and they couldn't even break the trail, so they did another 50-mile loop and back to Tal Vista, down to Yetna, and then back over to the finish. So it was a true 300-miler, but they had Mother Nature get in the way there at the week leading up to it, and they had 4 feet of snow that they had to contend with, so they had to change the race route a little bit.
Right. And, you know, it's obviously having more snow is also a problem. It's in some ways it's a good problem to have, but getting that much new snow that close to the race, it really requires that the people breaking the trail as well as the race officials really, you know, are much more involved on a much more granular level. They really have to make sure that the trail is passable and that the conditions are good enough for the teams to be able to run. And it's we are far away from the days in the 1970s where people would get out in their snowshoes and break trail as a regular occurrence. So even on these type of qualifying races, they really get the trail in better shape than that, so that teams can just run.
You know, looking here at the standings for the Northern Lights, I see a lot of new names here. We talked about the Tustamina, the top 10 was household names. In first place was Robert Reddington. If I am not mistaken, he is the Reddington that's the rookie entering in Iditarod this year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, obviously as a Reddington, he's someone who has grown up around the sport. But this is, it's a very exciting thing to see him win this race. And I think it bodes very, very well for how he'll perform at Iditarod.
And that's also his home trail race. He does live there in Kinnick and runs typically right there in the Big Lake Kinnick area on those trails. So I'm sure he was very familiar. Then we have a name that I'm not familiar with. Shiny, I believe is how you say it. Traska in second place. That's an amazing feat there. Then we have Jody Bailey, Charlie Benya, I believe is how you say his last name. He has also been a guest here on our show a couple of times. He's also an Iditarod veteran along with Jody. Then we have Michi Komno, and then we have Didi Genro in sixth place. And then in seventh, Allison Lifka, I believe is it. And then we have Ramey Smith, Tom Nolmeyer, Kelly Maxiner, and then Meredith Mapes. You know, I have to talk about Meredith Mapes a little bit before we jump in to the rest of the folks there. This young lady just qualified for Iditarod this year with this race, and she has been running dogs for a long time. She ran junior Iditarod several times, and in between just finished up a degree at UAA. So she's been running dogs and going to college and doing all that is required for her to do, and qualified for Iditarod in this race. And boy, was she excited on Facebook when she announced that. Did you see that those posts?
I did, and it's a very, very exciting thing, especially knowing that someone has spent many years pursuing this goal, which, as we talk about frequently, is not something that's easy to do. It's not something that's cheap to do. It's something that you really have to want to do it. You really have to want to do it for a long time in order to even get to the starting line. So it's a fantastic thing that she's done, and I'm very excited for her.
And, you know, what do you think of, and real quick, before we talk about Didi, we see Ramey Smith. We talked about his brother, Sim, winning the Tustamina. So anywhere you have the Smith brothers there, they are a musher that is always in contention, and it looks like Ramey came in eighth place here. But what do you think about Didi Genro coming in sixth place here? It is on her home trail. She does live in the Willow area, but typically does a lot of training out at Martin's Place and in that Big Lake area, and all of the folks that live here in the Matsu Valley run up to Yetna and Talvista and Squintna quite a bit, so this is our home trails. But what do you think about Didi coming in sixth place?
You know, Didi coming in sixth is very exciting. It is nearly as exciting to me as Jody coming in third. But the reason I'm excited about Didi coming in sixth is Didi Genro has been someone who has run Iditarod a whole bunch of times. I don't want to give the wrong number, but I think it's well over 30 times that she's run Iditarod, and has come in second a number of times, has had a bunch of top five finishes, has never quite been able to win. And I had started to think of Didi as someone who was not, who was falling out of, you know, the point where she was really in contention. And just to have her do this well in the Northern Lights 300, I think reminds everyone that she's still in there. And given the right circumstances, given the right weather and some good luck for her dogs, she's someone who definitely could have another top five finish and possibly could even win. I know it's a long shot for her to win, but it's not something that we should be thinking is just not a possibility at all.
Now, it does not have on the NorthernLights300.org, it doesn't have finishing time, so I don't know, you know, how much time was in between. I don't know if there was any neck and neck or anything like that, as there was pretty close in the Tustamina with Nick and Sim. But when you're coming in sixth place, you know, I think that that's saying something. And, you know, you and I have talked several times on this show about that cycle of a dog team, and it's usually that 5 or 6 year cycle. We see it with a lot of the folks that win multiple times. When we talk about Doug Swingley or Martin Boozer or Lance Mackey and all of his consecutive wins, they have that peak of 5 years, 4 or 5 years or so, where their team is just on target. And I just wonder if you know, teams like Jody Bailey or maybe even Didi or maybe even Ramey is hitting a new peak, because we are seeing these guys coming in at, you know, very fast times in these much shorter races than Iditarod, of course. But maybe it's a new era in terms of some of these old school mushers really pushing through and give Dallas and those top five guys a run for their money. What do you think?
You know, I think there's a real possibility for that, especially with someone like Jody Bailey, who has just been doing a little bit better every year and just has gotten herself right up to the point where she is, you know, she's not one of the names that you think of immediately when you think of who the top five contenders are, but she's right on the bubble of being in that group. We've also seen a lot in races earlier this year, a lot of female mushers doing very, very well. And, you know, I'm always saying I want Allie Durkel to win and when I did a rod, and while I still do, I think that if we had any female musher, you know, anyone like a Jody Bailey who would win I did a rod, that would just be tremendously exciting and do an awful lot for the sport.
You know, I totally agree. And Alex, we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to jump over and to talk a little bit about the Yukon Quest. I know we're going to be on next week as well, and we're going to talk about the lineup for the Quest. But, you know, since we've been on, a very curious piece of news came out in regards to the Quest, and it was in regards to Ed and Laura with missing the vet check. Can you give us a little bit of that story?
Yeah. Now, although, and correct me if I get this wrong, but Ed and Laura are kennel partners, and they were both going to run the Quest. Ed has never run the Quest before, so he is a rookie for the Quest, although he's run Iditarod many times and many other races. So certainly a very seasoned and well-established dog musher. And the rules of the Quest, as I understand it, were that there was a certain date where the rookies would have to do their vet check, and veterans could do a vet check with their own vet or with a private vet at any time, so they didn't have to make that particular vet check. And my understanding is that Ed and Laura had misjudged how much time it would take, or had run into weather when they were heading there, and he missed the rookie vet check. And so they had said that they had initially said the Quest that he would not be allowed to run, and several other mushers said that they were considering pulling out, and Laura was not going to run after that happened. And then very shortly thereafter, like within I think within a day, maybe 2 days, the Quest I was going to say the Quest police, but that makes no sense. The Quest organizers changed their mind and said that they would let Ed qualify with a private vet the same way Quest veterans would be allowed to.
Yeah, what I want to say first off is they were coming up from Michigan, so they were driving several thousand miles to make that race in the winter over the Alaska Highway, and he missed it by about 18 hours, I believe. But what I found so interesting was just that brotherhood that came together, and a lot of it was on social media. I know Hugh Neff and Sebastian and you know, all sorts of other people, big-name mushers, said, you know what? You guys were wrong, and even Brent Sass said, we're going to pull out of the Quest if something isn't done. And I tell you what, Alex, I saw it at about, 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening where Ed or somebody had posted that they had been DQ'd. And by the next morning, so almost overnight, I saw the post from the Yukon Quest where they changed their mind and said that they could continue and they were allowed to run, but they were going to have to pay a fine. And I believe it was a $1,000 fine, if I'm not mistaken. But just that coming together of mushers and really making a difference in such short amount of time, that's what I found remarkable.
Yeah, it was really something to watch. And, you know, we've talked a lot in the past about how the Quest is different, and the Quest seems to, in certain ways, be, you know, closer to, if there's any such thing as mushing purity. It's a more pure race, and it's a harder race, and there's a lot longer runs between checkpoints. And the people who are really kind of the Quest royalty, the people who have consistently done very, very well and really embody what the Quest is all about, people like Hugh Neff and Brent, they were very quick to come out and say that they felt like this decision was wrong, not because they don't want the dogs looked after, but because they thought that it was what the rule was meant to do wasn't exactly what was going on in this case, and so I think it was the right decision of the Quest, and I'm very glad that it happened that way.
I am too. And, you know, there has to be a little flexibility there. And I understand deadlines and missing meetings. And almost always at races, you will have these types of things in place. Like if you miss the musher meeting, you are either fined or withdrawn. You know, things like that are there for a reason, because all of these things are very important. With the Quest, everything has to be fluid. You have to get your vet checks done. You have to make sure that your drop bags are in on a certain time, because they're flown 1,000 miles over the trail. Some places are not road accessible. So things have to be in place logistically. Otherwise, it could just become a nightmare. So I understand why these rules are in place, but I do have to, you know, give a thumbs up to the organizers there of the Quest for making an exception. Because, yeah, like you said, Ed Strelstra, I believe is how you pronounce it. I'm terrible with names. I apologize. Yeah, he is a rookie, but he is a seasoned musher. He's done the Iditarod several times and typically a middle to the back of the packer, but he is an Iditarod veteran. And Laura, she is doing both races this year. She's doing the Quest, then turning around and doing Iditarod, and she's a young girl, I believe only 19, 20 years old, and I look forward to watching her in both these races, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. Very quickly.
I just wanted to say that Severin Caffrey was also DQ'd from the Quest because his dogs weren't inoculated against kennel cough, and I think that it was right to let that stand because that's a much more serious thing than missing a deadline for vet check.
No, maybe we can talk about that when we're on next week, talking about the lineup. There's all sorts of good tidbits that we can talk about the Quest. Alex, we are out of time. It's great talking to you, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.